This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
Professor Tanya Aspalan is President of the Australian Council of Deans of Education. She joins us this morning on the radio. G'day, Tanya.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, indeed.
What's the Council of Deans of Education?
The Council of Deans represents every dean of education across the nation. About 42 universities each have a school or a college of education, and their dean is a member of our association.
All right, so you've got a pretty good cross-section of schools right across the country there. You get a pretty good perspective of exactly the challenges facing teachers and the administration of schools.
That's right. There are some key national issues that really need to be addressed fairly urgently because they are similar across states and territories.
All right, no worries. Look, one of the things is that perhaps these days we're loading teachers up with a lot more than we used to. You know, these days they're expected to sort of do all that paperwork, the extra paperwork that comes with being a teacher. They have to go to school functions quite often during the week. Parent-teacher interviews. I've got a guy who I know who's a teacher who calls them parent-torture interviews. There is a lot of going on in a teacher's life that's just outside of the curriculum.
Well, it is. It's a very complex life, and they are prepared to facilitate learning so that every child can reach their potential, and that they're distracted from that, actually, as their core business, by all these extra activities that you've just mentioned.
So, I mean, what's the answer to this? These are directives obviously coming from the Education Department. Do you think they're, you know, thinking this thing through when they're sort of expecting the teachers to work so hard and to have so many extra duties? And as we hear, it gets in the way of the actual curriculum and the education.
It does. And I think it's snowballed as time's gone on. You know, teachers can fix this, teachers can fix that. As you know, as soon as there's a problem, governments turn to schools to fix it, when in fact it's either a community issue or a parental issue. And teachers being teachers go along with things, you know, and they've got strong unions in Australia, but it is time that teachers, like the nurses, shut down wards a few years ago and got the public attention. Teachers really do need to do something quite drastic if this education in this country is going to improve, because they are willing horses who are doing everything at the moment, and they need to pause, look at their work, and governments and employers need to work with them to take them back to their core business, which is facilitating learning in classrooms for our young people.
The kids just went on strike a few weeks ago. Now you reckon the teachers should go as well? Hey, look, I'll read you a couple of these messages that have come in on Facebook. If you'd like to contact the program through Facebook, you can do that. Just head to ABC Overnights, type that into the Facebook search engine, and we'll get your message there. Also, you can text the program 0437 774 774, or you can ring us in 1300 800 222. Sam says, there is so much more administration, testing and reporting than ever before, all of which takes teaching out of the classroom. I don't know what the best balance is. We've already commented on that. And Connie suggested it's the same with other professions, I think. The amount of paperwork nurses have to contend with is staggering. A friend of mine once said, it's a shame we have patients as they hinder getting the paperwork done. The parallel between teaching and nursing is there again.
Well, that's right. And somebody on Q&A recently said, if the kids didn't come to school, I'd be able to get my work done. And that reflects the frustrations of teachers. We've gone mad with compliance and risk assessment, and understandably, in a highly regulated profession, this is necessary. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but paraprofessional staff and administrative staff could work together with teachers to get this work done and free teachers up to do teaching. So the nature of work has become complex, and teachers can't do everything, and they need a team now to work with to really achieve the best for young people of Australia.
Do government agencies recognise this?
Well, the status of teaching profession hearings have just taken place, and this has been one of the key findings of the panel, that the overwork of teachers on non-teaching duties is amazingly high, in fact, higher than other teachers in the profession elsewhere in the world.
There you go. I did have someone else suggest that, and this is something that often gets levelled at teachers, is that they have too many holidays. They have so many holidays. Do they deserve all those holidays, perhaps?
Well, I've been in this game for 40 years, and when I was a school teacher, I used to hang out for holidays. I don't do that anymore because it's a really demanding profession. And you don't just think while you're in the classroom. You think while you're peeling the potatoes, having a shower, driving to work. It's so intense. That I think I'd like to call them not holidays, but pupil free time, where teachers actually reconfigure what they're going to do next term so that they can guide learning for every child. You know, there's 30 kids in a classroom these days, or 25.
Yep.
So they're doing 25 planning, sets of planning every day for every child. A lot of work.
That is a lot of work. And look, the teacher I know, or a lot of the teachers I know, suggest that they spend a lot of the evenings, their evenings, planning for the next day. So it's not just an eight-hour day. A teacher works quite often.
No, you can't just walk out of the office and shut the door. You know, you've got those faces looking at you straight in the eye that says, well, where are you going to take me next? Because I can't do this. Or I'm bored. I need to go somewhere else. And teachers think about that and prepare for that constantly, all day, all night, over the weekends, during these pupil-free times. So that intensity can be exhausting, and we are seeing a high degree of burnout in teachers at the moment, or what of our experts calls it, demoralisation. They're frustrated. They want to get on and work with young people, but they're frustrated by all the extra demands, which often they are doing at night after the school hours.
There used to be just three terms when I went to school, and you had two-week holidays between. Now there's four terms. They get an extra 2 weeks holidays, the kids and the teachers. Is that driven, do you think, by the extra work on the teachers, or is that driven by the fact that they want to give kids a little bit more of a break?
Well, I think children do need a break out of that intense curriculum work. In Australia, we have a very overcrowded curriculum, so kids are pushed all the time to meet those content demands. And I think they do need to free up more regularly. I used to teach in those days of three terms, and that 16-week term was a killer, both for the teachers and the students. So the essentially, four 10-weeks or 11-week terms give everybody that opportunity to refresh before they go into the next cycle. I think it's a great idea.
All right, let's have a chat to some of our listeners this morning. Good morning, Laurie.
I think parents and the community itself actually has a very high expectation of what teachers are able to do. I've known of some parents who expect the teachers to be able to discipline their kids so that when they come home, they're all right. They don't want to parent them at home when they're playing up or anything else, but there's an expectation that the teachers will be able to pull them into gear. And I think the other thing that I've seen more than once, and actually I interrupted myself into this conversation, and there was a mother on a veranda with a child in that classroom. Child must have been about 8, 9. And this mother was really ripping into this teacher, and I'm not talking just cranky, I'm talking about language. And this kid is standing beside the mother while the mother is actually swearing and using really vile language. And that was the issue. The child was using, violent language at school. This young child, and the parent was expecting the teacher to pull it up so that it wouldn't be piled at home. And I think one of the other things I think too is school uniforms are great, but there's also people out there who can't afford them. And I'm 74 now, and when I went to high school, I actually had to do 100 lines, and I don't know how many times, and I lived on the Atherton Tablelands. Winter is cold. We couldn't afford a jumper, and I wore my sister's jumper, and it was pink and had a steeplechase motive on the top. And every time I wore that, I got 100 lines until my mum wrote in and said, you can't do it in pads, I can't afford the pads. So I used to spend all my lunch time writing on the whiteboard. I must wear my uniform, I must wear my uniform, I must wear my uniform. And that's one of the things I think that I would really go off the deep end, but I certainly wouldn't, swear or whatever at the teachers. But I'm just sort of saying there's some things out there that parents can't meet, but there's also, you know, like the language and lack of respect.
Yeah. I mean, the school uniform issue, that's really one for the students, I suppose, more than the teachers, but we get what you're saying.
I realise that, but it's a response, though.
Yeah, sure.
To the children parents not being able to afford the uniform, so the children actually get the penalty.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, that was wrong in your case, Laurie. Whoever the teacher was who made you do lines for not having the correct school uniform probably should take a good look at themselves if they're still around, but they're probably not, Laurie.
I agree with that.
Thank you. Hey. There's a couple of things there we'll bring up, Tanya. One is the safety of teachers, because actually this was just at my daughter's primary school. One of the teachers was doing the after-school thing when all the kids come and get picked up and there's a teacher on duty to look after everyone. And one of the parents came flying in really aggressively and actually assaulted him. And went to court and there was a big brouhaha at the school about it. But the teacher that this guy attacked was such a meek and mild teacher. It just seemed so wrong. I mean, we hear about in the aged care industry and in the hospital industry is about hospital workers getting assaulted quite often. I mean, it's not something we tend to think about a lot with teachers, but it is a real fact, isn't it?
Well, it is. And Phil Riley from Melbourne has just completed a whole lot of studies worldwide about the violence with leaders of schools and teachers from parents and members of the community. And this certainly is on the increase. And the safety of teachers is certainly a big, you know, detractor from the profession. When people read about these stories in the paper, they say, well, why would I do that? So it is a problem, lack of respect for teachers by some people. But I don't want to dwell on the negative, because when you go into schools around Australia, as I do, there is still a lot of respect between communities and schools if the principals and the teachers do the work to build that respect and to build that mutual understanding of what's going to happen in the school day. So there's a lot more respect for teachers than these stories that we hear, although there is increasing violence, if you like, against principals and teachers statistically.
It's always a small number that spoils it for the rest of us, isn't it? Look, just quickly on that other point that was made there, do we need to be a little bit more flexible with our rules surrounding uniforms, especially in public schools?
Well, you'd have to ask why we still, you know, are pursuing uniforms. Is it a form of discipline? Who knows? Because as we know, there are huge communities in Australia who cannot afford uniforms. So it shouldn't be a priority. Schools should be about communities getting together to learn and to prepare for the future. Whether what you actually wear is probably of less importance, but there are parents who do want their children to go to those schools because uniforms are a form of discipline and they choose to do that. And I think that's fine if that's your choice. But if you can't afford it or if your choice is for greater flexibility, I hope that schools can provide that. And I think they're coming to understand that they do need to be more flexible, particularly with low-income communities.
Yep. Good one. All right. Good morning, Rod.
In my family, I've got a sister-in-law, a daughter, two nieces and a nephew that are all teachers.
Wow.
We make allowances for all of them.
Where did you go wrong, Rod?
I spelled Smith with two Fs. Is that correct? Now, my sister-in-law, I watched her through the ages, and the after-school work that she did, she'd come home. She lived in the country. We'd go up and visit. She'd come home from school. She would cook an evening meal, and then after that she would sit down with school books and a glass of Merlot or something and mark, which I think a lot of teachers do, and mark books for an hour or two while we sit at the table talking. She'd sit there marking books. Mm. The nieces now, I watch them, and they're after school, they're at home with young children of their own, and then after that they're doing lesson planning or whatever. My daughter teaches special children, and the rewards that I see on their faces at the end of the day is worth it. But the things that they have to put up with is absolutely... It's not just going to school and doing the work. It's the after work. And the other thing is the bloke at the table of knowledge at the club where I drink is a retired headmaster. And the smile that you see on Terry's face when students that are grown up now come up and say thanks very much is just unbelievable. He's a bloke that just smiles with appreciation that comes up. But for God's sake, people, these people work really hard. There's one more thing too, Pab, before I go.
Yes.
I was just down at the SCG and there was no Eagles.
Right.
I was underground. I thought, I've heard this conversation. I'll drop this truck here and I'll walk out and have a look. No, there's no Eagles.
No Eagles. Thank you, Rod, for clearing that one up. Appreciate it. Look after yourself. Drive carefully, all right?
Right, up,
and say hi to all the teachers in the family for us, will you?
Yeah, they're good people. Just, they really work hard. They've studied hard to get where they are. They work hard, but, you know, the teachers aren't there to solve. I know people that send their kids to school sick because, well, it's not my problem, you know, when they're at school, it's their problem. And then don't answer the phone. The school's ringing up, your kid's sick, don't answer the phone. No, they've got them until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's their problem.
Good on you, Rod. Thanks. Look, there is a lot of that that you hear, Tanya, anecdotally, about, you know, parents expect the teachers not to just be babysitters and the schools not to just be babysitters, but also to look after their health and, you know, teach them better ways to behave. It's very much beyond the teaching profession that a lot of parents have that expectation.
They do. And, this, you know, that man was mentioning the intrinsic rewards of teaching. And, you know, most teachers you meet are passionate about their clientele. They work hard and they get that tremendous satisfaction from seeing their students achieve. I think that points to the fact that remuneration is important for teachers, and it's a good starting salary for teachers, but it flattens out early. But teachers do say they're not in the profession for the money, but what they are looking for is more focused work and a bit of a career structure. And that's one of the things that I think teachers, governments should think about, is giving teachers career structures like are available in Singapore or other countries of the world, where they can actually progress to be master teachers, lead teachers, and work within the profession to grow. All of these, you know, looking after kids and having parental biff-ups and so on, it makes teachers feel demoralised, and the government needs to step in and say, well, we'll look after that bit and we'll also give you a career structure. There will be increased remuneration. But the point I'm making is all of those things are secondary to the passion that teachers have for their work. And that's the important thing.
Which is certainly why, they do it. And there's a lot of reward, I'd imagine, in that story we just heard of ex-students coming up and saying g'day. And, you know, knowing that you're making a difference and helping these kids get on with their life, I'd imagine that is a huge part of what motivates most teachers to do the job. It was also mentioned there about special needs. We're hearing more and more that teachers in classrooms are having to deal with special needs children. Is that another factor that's putting a bit of extra pressure on them?
Well, it is. And in fact, if they were resourced just a little bit better, and again, I'm looking at policy here, but practices would improve for special needs kids and mainstream students if more resources were made available. You can't teach a class of 25 if all the time you're drawn away by students who have very legitimate needs for support. So when the policy, and I'm a great believer of the integration of special needs children into classrooms, because that's what life is about. A classroom is a mini society. But employers have to resource it properly and everybody wins. Until that happens, teachers can't get on with the differentiated curriculum catering for all children. They get called away to those high need children. And others have to work autonomously.
This sounds like something that really needs to be addressed at a federal level rather than a state level, but obviously both levels of government need to be cooperating to develop, you know, better strategies.
Well, that's the beauty of a federation, isn't it?
because the states
employ teachers and the feds pay for the preparation of teachers. So they do need to work collaboratively. And there's more of that now than there ever was. And that's one of the roles of the Deans of Education is as a lobby group to pull the governments together to try and address problems like that. But special education for young people is sadly lacking resources at the moment. And we really need to look into that and make that a very big public national issue.
I've got a lot of texts here. I'll read through a few of them, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I'm a second-year teacher and have averaged over 6 hours of marking at home each week in term one. This is on top of the planning for each class. I love it, but it's 24 hours, 7 days a week job. That's from William Ballarat. I've got here, your guest hit the nail on the head. Parents need to take responsibility for the behaviour of these kids. Academic education starts at home. If there is no example set at home, teachers have an uphill battle. Elements of commercial media constantly sinking the boot into teachers doesn't help the situation one little bit. I've got here, Plato's Republic didn't succeed without teachers, said Mitch Edwards. Thank you, Mitch. I'm also agreeing with everything your guest is saying, says Sudi. To put it into context, the Year 7 cohort at the school I work at has students with English skills ranging from Year 2 standard to Year 9, and the classroom teacher is expected to cater for all these vast differences in students in the one class. There's another thing we haven't really talked about, is that some kids are, you know, going to be better learners and more interested than other kids, and if you're banging them all in the same class, it just gives the teacher another thing that they have to deal with.
Mm. Yeah, I really think, you know, while the politicians are bickering around policy, teachers are getting on and doing their work. If we're going to build a great nation, and this is a really timely moment, teachers have to be up front and central, respected, to lead the way forward. And they are doing that under very, very difficult conditions, 55 yep. hours a week average. So, So the media, the parents, communities, leaders all have to work together to get us to that point.
I've got here, I'm a teacher, and with Saturday sport and the 7-day school camp, I was on duty for 19 days out of 20. So it's not just long hours, it's long weeks as well.
It is indeed, and it's exhausting. And we are losing great teachers to other professions, and it could be so easily fixed with some new policy and some a little bit of money, not a lot of money, and working with teachers. When I was a teacher in the 70s, or that woman who was 74, you know, the nature of teachers' work has changed, the context has changed, and yet schools are not keeping up with those changes. We're still grading children, putting them in chronological groups. We're still working with a single teacher. We need teams of professionals working with differentiated groups of kids to give every child the best opportunity to become the best person they can. That is kids who are very bright as well as those who have particular needs.
What about the other thing that we just heard there is about the way that teachers are treated in the media? Do you think they're a little bit of an easy target for some media outlets? And you know,
Well, absolutely, and with respect, because you're one of the journalists that we like to talk to. Where are all the great stories about teachers who are turning kids' lives around? You know, we've had this enormous debate around ATAR and whether a school leaving school makes for a great teacher. Well, only 30% of school leavers come into teaching now. There's a real decline. So, well, who's coming in? Why don't they publicise that? What about great teachers who lift the literacy levels of, say, Indigenous students in Australia, which we've just heard of through the NAPLAN? Why aren't those stories on the front page instead of banging on about an ATAR of 80? Which is not an indicator of what a teacher can become.
Good point you're making there. Look, I'll read one more text and we'll head back to the phones. I've got here, kids haven't changed, but society has and parenting has. One of the biggest frustrations in schools is that it's increasingly difficult for the principal and teachers to be in charge. Now when students do the wrong thing and are consequenced, it's teachers who fear the parents' response, not the students. That says it all there, doesn't it? Let's head to the phones. Chrissy, good morning.
I've worked 25 years, I'm retired, not as a teacher, but around the schools. So I've been boarding house mistress, I have been after school care coordinator. I have done teaching and got cold feet at the last minute thinking this is the mug's game. I couldn't do it. I wasn't prepared to be a martyr. But the one thing that I am good at is cooking. I was originally a caterer from Melbourne and a cook from Emily McPherson College. And I really believe that if all our children got a really nice hot meal and some of them helped prepare it, that we would have better functioning kids during the day for learning. And that still, even with all this tuck shop business over the last 20 years, it's only just mildly improved situations. But I know schools that still have chips or this or that and, you know, rubbish. So a hot meal prepared by grade 4, 5 and 6 and preps is so important. Queensland is just catching up on their education. I'm from Victoria, Melbourne, and when I came to Queensland, I saw the huge gap. And Anna Bligh helped by making it available for kinder. But, it's a user-pay society. So really the government do not want everybody educated at the same time, which is just ridiculous, because education fuels a nation.
I think it costs money. That's probably what the government...
No, they've got money. About. They've got money. They waste money.
A merit of priorities.
Yes.
Chrissy. Yes. Hey, thank you for your call. Very interesting.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. Tanya, pretty interesting points there. I mean, also schools rely on not just teachers, but a lot of the parents who are involved in associations and dealing things too, and perhaps increasingly so. So is this another area that perhaps parents could be brought in and maybe take on some of these duties that you're talking about?
Well, they could, and they're very willing to do so, and many, many do it on a voluntary basis now. They're the unsung heroes of school, many of them. And I just want to make the point, there is a strong correlation between nutrition, well-being and academic success. And that's been proven time and time again. I worked in Lockhart River years ago, and the principal there built a kitchen and fed all the kids before school started. And the behaviour, the academic learning, the involvement with the community just increased tenfold. And it became a really great community for children to attend school, and it hadn't been previously. So the point made is a good one.
You do hear about programs that are around the place, especially in disadvantaged areas, where they're providing breakfast for the kids, which has got to be a good thing. A text here that says, Philip Riley from the ACU, your guest just mentioned him, is also an expert on teacher attrition, and which obviously, you know, teacher attrition, where's that at? Anecdotally, we hear that less and less teachers are being attracted to the profession. Does that play out statistically as well?
It's a contentious issue, but the statistics are showing us that there is a decline in applications, although the people who are applying, it is their first preference. So people are coming into teaching as their first preference. It is declining. The attrition rate is contestable. It's between 15 and 50%. But, you know, we don't know whether people are leaving the profession altogether or Australian graduates are going overseas and working where they've got much better conditions in some cases, better pay, better conditions of work, and then returning to our profession more experienced as global teachers. And I think that's a good thing. So we don't have really very accurate figures on workforce planning or attrition, and we're working on that. The Deans of Education are working on that with the government. But Phil Riley is making some very important points about the profession, and if people would like to read his work, particularly policymakers, there are some answers in his work. We can address these problems if we just commit a collective effort to do so.
I've got a text here from Lisa, who is a principal, I think. It says, nothing has been mentioned about the increasing levels of students who are disadvantaged and have suffered trauma. I am an assistant principal, and the majority of my work is about attendance, dealing with agencies and setting up programs to support the welfare of vulnerable kids. You know, it's something that just doesn't affect teachers, but also principals and the whole, and assistant principals as well.
Yeah, as I said, I think the nature of the work in schools has changed tremendously in the last 10 years, and our clientele is much more variable than it was. And so these new roles are sort of morphing rather than being strategically developed and resourced properly. So again, teachers being willing horses, principals being willing horses, are working, you know, well beyond their expectations of their role to accommodate for the various needs of all these different groups that are coming into schools and doing fantastic work, but it's taking a personal toll on these people because of a lack of appropriate resources.
Roy has sent a text here that we should address here, I think, and he just says that whenever you hear someone criticise teachers, you find the person is doing it generally that's doing it is generally ignorant and probably needs a teacher. My son is a teacher in New South Wales. They are all on contracts and are terminated at the end of the year. He has trouble getting a loan for a house, says Roy. You know, the way we employ teachers, because we're putting them a lot of them on contracts these days, and we do hear this, and of course that makes it very difficult to get any sort of financial security and stability and a loan, or if you wanted to get a house, is the way we're employing them the right way? It seems a bit silly putting them on contracts.
Roy's on the mark because of graduates, and they're not all young people, but graduates of teacher preparation programs now are consistently put on contracts, and there's a huge casualisation of the profession. And, you know, you can take it for so long hanging out for the job, the continuing job, so you can build a house, buy a house, whatever. And that's one of the reasons behind the attrition, that people can go into other countries in the world and get an ongoing role with a higher salary to give them greater consistency in the work that they're doing. And so the profession needs all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. It needs casuals, it needs people on contract, but it needs more people on long-term careers so people can make a commitment to the profession. This is a big call on governments. They keep talking about attrition. This is one of the key reasons for attrition. Until the government steps up and says, you know, 60% of our workforce, and the DG in Queensland's trying to do this, increase the number of continuing positions for teachers, over the longer term, we will continue to see attrition within the profession. People get taken up by other professions because they're given a long-term career option.
Let's have a chat to Owen. Good morning, Owen.
Yes, good morning, Michael and Tanya. Now, I just have two very quick points to make. First of all, last night, what I wanted to say about the state has been covered, so I just wanted to wanted to say that Richard Glutter, who is a radio presenter here in Sydney, makes a good point. He says that in the olden days, he felt that maybe the pendulum on teaching went too far, that, you know, teachers and authority figures at schools were treated, you know, with absolute deference and not questioned, and that led to troublesome situations. Whilst these days, he thinks the pendulum has swung the other way, that teachers are not treated with enough deference, respect, and not their judgments not valued as much as it was in the past. So that's my first quick point. But the second point, and I talked to you about this earlier, I just want to reinforce it. And the second point is that I think teachers, along with nurses, are two of the most underappreciated sectors of our community. And I was not special needs for the most part, but I had a disability. And the teachers I had during my school years, for the overwhelming part, were exceptional. And if I could just give you one example, I had a English teacher who, for example, she injured her back one day and she came into work and she actually lay on the floor so she could sort of teach us. She didn't want to take the day off. And the other time she flew in from the US. She had a family holiday in the US. She flew in from the US, and we lived in Newcastle. She flew in from the US, straight away took the two-hour drive to Newcastle and came in straight away to teach our class. And I found that those types of teachers were not the exception. They're usually the norm.
I'm with you totally, Owen. All the teachers that we've had contact with, they're just fantastic and do take a lot of interest in what's happening with your child. And also, they go step out of the ordinary, you know. You can get in touch with them any time of the day. If there's a child that needs it, they might deal with them after school or on the weekend. You know, those are the wonderful teachers that you see who are just so passionate about their gig. Let's hope it keeps going and that we don't see the attrition levels keep going the way they are. I've got there from Sarah. It says, why is there not more recognition for the contribution of teachers' aides in the system?
Look, teacher aides, I mean, every teacher, I think, loves their teacher aide because that's the resource they need to extend the children in ways. We don't just hand things over to teacher aides and say, look after those kids. Teacher aides can be part of the planning teams with teachers where we go through and say, this child needs this, this child needs that. Your role will be X. Here are the resources. Let's work together to extend these children. Teacher aides, even the terminology is not really something that I would appreciate. If you work in a hospital, you see nothing but teams of people working together respectfully.
Yeah.
That model needs to come into the schools where everybody has a specific designated role with the same purpose to enrich the learning of the child. And, you know, again, I'm sounding a bit like a nag now. Until we reconfigure these teams and look at the work of teachers in a contemporary and futures way, this is going to continue. Teacher aides, paraprofessional staff need to work with teachers as the expert because teachers are the expert in teaching and learning. They need a team around them to take them forward, and teacher aides do a fantastic job. So I'm not sure whether this person means professional respect or through remuneration, but I think every teacher respects the teacher aide. It's just, again, an employing issue where policy and employers need to come together to enhance the work of those people.
I think, you know, that teachers would appreciate teachers' aides if nobody else would, but I think perhaps they don't get the recognition within the education system or within parents as well, who are not really sure what a teacher's aide do and how valuable they are. We were mentioning about uniforms before. I've got a text here that says, we're a low-income family. When our son was at school, I was pleased there was a school uniform because we couldn't afford the brand names clothing that some children had.
Mm.
So that's another side of that. Mm. And I've also got here, my grandson is an associate degree holder in teaching with Asperger's. He couldn't have done it without a teacher's help in the early years. So there's another someone there who's getting a little bit of extra support now is themselves turned out to be a teacher, which is a good story. Mm. Wendy's called us. She's an ex-teacher. G'day, Wendy.
Yeah, I'm an ex-teacher. I didn't stick at it for very long. 6 years was enough, and that's back in the 70s. But my daughter is a teacher, and she's passionate about it. And most of the people that she graduated with after 3 years did not have jobs. Mm-hmm. Or you know, they could only get a day here and a day there and whatever. And so they went on to something else. And that comment about people being on contracts, I'm in Queensland, and Anna Bligh introduced them when she was the education minister. And they are absolutely disgraceful because what they do is they put them on after day nine. After day nine, they do a count to see how many is required. They put them on, finish them up in November, so they don't get a continuation of a contract through the next year. And unless they get continuous contracts, they can't get permanency. Mm. And it's taken a long time. But our daughter's now got permanency, and like that other fellow said about trying to get a home loan or something, you know, she's passionate about teaching. She loves it. The kids adore her. Yeah. Absolutely, and she's being, you know, very successful. But, you know, most of the people she graduated with don't are not in the teaching profession anymore, which is a great shame.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is the assault. They're just dreadful.
Yeah, look, we talked about this a little bit before. It's horrific.
She's in the high schools, but she's also taught, because she's been prepared to do anything, you know, she's had quite a bit of time in special schools. And if they occur, she's had three lots of concussion.
Jeez,
if they occur in a special school.
Wendy, we've got to wind it up because the news is coming up. I mean, you know, it's not only teachers probably scared of the parents, but also some of the kids these days. Look, it's a fascinating topic. I'm glad we could actually look at it a little bit and diffuse some of the issues around it. Tanya, it's very enjoyable talking to you, and good luck with it all, okay?
Thanks. Let's give a shout-out to teachers everywhere. Thanks so much.
No worries. That's Professor Tanya Aspland there, who's the President of the Australian Council of Deans of Education.